ladies, gentlemen, depressed pimps in between, welcome one and welcome all to episode 181 of the Arsenal Cannon Podcast Extravaganza. I'm gonna be honest with you folks, we fucked up. We made a Jorginho-esque catastrophic error in the recording of our podcast today. We were originally supposed to have you about 75 minutes of depression, where myself and the dictionary, Mac Johnson, and the man, the myth, the legend with the versatile name, Rob Bob Bertha, the man that I so like to call during the episode, Disappointment. We had a nice podcast for you, man. We did. But it fell apart. And yeah, so we're having to adapt, overcome, and give you the content that you all may not really want, but you do deserve it. Because you are the ones that tune in every week. So we're going to do something a little bit different where the boys and myself are going to give our canon concerns, our good stuff, and our explosive moment. All just in like a voice message format sort of a thing. Yeah. So I know nobody really probably cares, but basically the podcast only recorded my audio and only recorded about 6 minutes of the other guys. And as you know, when I'm giving an intro, I really like the attention. So I tend to take a really long time. And because of that, it's probably really just Mac that spoke for about 2 minutes. And then other than that, it was just dead air until I would speak. So, sorry, folks. We plan to have you a regularly scheduled Extra Cannon podcast after the Brentford, hopefully, rebound in the Carabao Cup in the middle of the week. No promises there, though, because Zencaster may go kaplooey again. I guess you really just never know. But without further ado, I've been chatting shit, walking around my garage for about 3 minutes, so I'm just going to get right into it. Starting off with my canon concerns on the draw that truly felt like a loss to Tottenham. And my canon concern that I went with in the recording was a point-blank simple one, because you know I'm not capable of deep thought, and it was the injuries. I know other teams suffer injuries, and other teams suffer injuries to ever-important players. But it really takes some doing to have two of your starting number six options and two of your starting left wing options out injured. Mac made a sensational point in the podcast saying that in an Arteta system, the wings and the number six, those are probably our most important areas on the pitch. And when you're, you know, out of two of each position, when you're out of four players, grand total, you could argue that you might actually see all of them starting in a way, then it's going to be a not great situation. And the canon concern doesn't just apply for the Tottenham draw. It also applies for the rest of the season as well, because we're having these issues in September, man. It's been 5 Premier League games and a Champions League match, and we're already suffering from an injury crisis. And we know that we have players like Zinchenko and like Thomas Partey, who is currently out, that struggle to stay fit. So that's got to be my canon concern. Going into the rest of the season, you just hope that we get a stroke of luck, because I think that's crucial in the Premier League. We saw it with Manchester City last season. They had incredible luck as injuries go. You're going to get players that get little niggles here and there. But if you can avoid horrible, long-term, big problem injuries to prominent players, then you have a much better chance at having a successful season. And if the beginning of our campaign this year is anything to go by, it ain't looking good, kids. But that's enough on the canon concern, really. I think there was a lot of things you probably could have classified as a canon concern from this match. Eddie Nketiah playing 90 minutes also probably is a shout, but I personally said on the original recording that I'm not sure he would have played 90 minutes if Declan Rice didn't pick up the halftime injury, because I would like to think that it probably just would have been a Reese Nelson or an Emile Smith Rowe or potentially even a Kai Havertz to come on in that sort of a role. But instead we saw both Declan Rice and Fabio Vieira come off, and there is a possibility that Fabio Vieira came off because maybe Arteta wanted a little more heft, a little more bulk, because we were losing that in Declan Rice coming off injured for Jorginho. But yeah, my canon concern, while the Eddie thing is worrying, and I didn't like his performance, and I didn't think he brought anything to the table, the canon concern has to be the injuries. And I'm just crossing my fingers as hard as I possibly can until my knuckles turn white, that our luck can switch up a little bit. So let me move on to good stuff. Good stuff you could take away from this, I think, is that now Tottenham are going to once again be severely overrated. I genuinely believe that they are the media's favorite team. I don't really know why. I kind of understood why when Harry Kane played there, because he was their golden boy. And Tottenham have had a lot of prominent Englishmen over the years, so maybe it's just something deeply embedded into the culture of English media. They see Tottenham as an Englishman's club or something like that. Now they have James Maddison, who's obviously one of the most likable England players, along with our very own Bukayo Saka, that plays there. So I can't imagine the media will start disliking them at all. But with that comes them becoming overrated. I really don't think that this Tottenham team is as good as people think it is. I think Ange's doing a fine job, and this is the best I've seen Tottenham look in a while, but that's not really saying much. They look disastrous under Nuno, Mourinho, and Conte. For once, they just finally have a manager who's willing to let the team play, and he has a decent squad, and he has players with potential. So now you're seeing a better Spurs. I mean, that's going to be what happens. But I really think there's only so far the Spurs team can go, because one, they run terribly, and two, you'd like to think that people like James Maddison and even a Bissouma, they're not really going to want to stick around there for much longer if somebody else comes calling. I mean, let's say Maddison has a barnstorming season this campaign, and someone like a Bayern Munich who recently purchased Harry Kane comes in. There's absolutely no way that Maddison would reject them, because he knows that at Tottenham you don't win trophies. And I'm not really ever going to be that worried about Tottenham in any capacity. So suffer now, Arsenal fans. All you pimps out there, you're going to be pretty damn annoyed with how highly they're talked about. But you know it all comes crashing down at Tottenham. It's just the way it goes, man. And basically, the better they get, the more enjoyable their inevitable demise is. So good stuff is that Tottenham's on the rise, funnily enough. I know it sounds weird to say, but it's always good when Tottenham rise, because you know the fall's coming shortly. Explosive moment, just because I've already been recording for 9 minutes. The lads are absolutely going to roast me for just being able to talk for this long, uninterrupted. But as they and maybe even some of you know, I used to record all of the podcasts like this in my freaking car, talking into my phone like the lunatic I am. So I'm a seasoned veteran, okay? Explosive moment has to be the double-sided situation of Declan Rice getting injured and Jorginho coming onto the pitch. Maddison wreaked havoc on our side when Rice got injured. No coincidence whatsoever that he was basically completely nullified when Rice was on the pitch. Then as soon as Jorginho came on, Maddison looked unfreaking real and had so much space. And then you couple that with the fact that Jorginho made a catastrophic Zencaster destroying episode 181-esque error. It's just the explosive moment without a shadow of a doubt. And we did all believe that that was probably the moment that saw Arsenal not get anything from this game. And it was a thing where we kind of all believed that if that moment didn't happen, we probably would have won that game. I genuinely believe that. Also, another, I just wanted to circle back because I forgot I said this. Another thing on good stuff is that very, 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 very late chance for Tottenham came to Richarlison and not Harry Kane. Because you know that Harry Kane, who's one of the best strikers in the world, as he's showing in the Bundesliga at the moment, would have just notched that home and really made us suffer. But that's all I have for you today. My little wacky intro. And then the three main thingy-mabobs. So apologies for the podcast being a bit unconventional this week. Once again, we're hoping to be back to our regular methods in the middle of the week. But enough about me. Without further ado, here's everyone. Because that's the one good thing. We had Alfie send in a voice note because we wanted him to get some input for this game. So he sent us a voice message, ironically. Maybe that was a bit of foreshadowing. So here's the thoughts of Alfie Kulshaw, Rob Worthington, and Mac Johnson. And they probably won't say it, so I will. Do not forget to leave a review. Thank you.
So I'll start with my good stuff. And it's got to be the first 35 minutes, because I thought, you know, we had the Nketiah near post chance, the Jesus one where he skied it off the one off Madison, the Jesus back post, Vicario save. We scored. If we'd had taken one of those three chances, we might have been in a very commanding position to win that game. But instead, we didn't. And as I said, I don't know what happened, because we looked like we were the better team. Like, we looked like the gap that we expect between these two teams. We played exactly in the way we played for most of last season in these big games, and then it all changed. But yeah, the good stuff would just be that 35 minutes, the fact that we showed that we still have that level performance in our locker. My canon concern is, well, I've got two, the injuries that are piling up. I think that'll be mentioned. I'm sure someone else will have that as a canon concern. But also the mental side of the game. And the soft factors, and I think Arteta's got a challenge on his hand to reinstall the lightness and carefree nature of the way we played last season, before it all started tensing up towards the end of last season and this season. Because, like, even Saliba, some of his passes were so sloppy, and that's just not like Saliba, is it? So, yeah, disappointing with that. My explosive moment. It's a negative explosive moment. It's got to be Jorginho's giveaway that led to the Son goal. We allowed the narrative that I'm not ready to have to put up with for the next week or so, that they've been revitalized and we're, you know, not as good as we were last season. We've allowed that narrative to creep in, even though it just didn't look like it should be in the first 35 minutes or so.
Hey everybody, I hope you're well. Sorry about the slightly different format of the show today. Daniel's probably already told you we did a full recording today, and yeah, for the first time ever, Zencaster fucked us over. So yeah, Mac and I lost our files from today's recording, so I've literally tried everything to recover them. But yeah, seems impossible this week. So yeah, you're just gonna get my sort of good stuff, canon concerns, an explosive moment. I'm going to start with my like major canon concern, which I spoke about the show, which never went on to exist, and that's how Mikel Arteta balances his meritocracy with the suitability to football matches. So, what I mean by that is basically Eddie Nketiah starting the match. based on his recent performance is perfectly fine. But on this occasion in a North London derby, I think you have to sort of throw the meritocracy out the window a little bit. That's not to say that Eddie's performance don't warrant him starting football matches, but on this occasion, I just think Kai Havertz starting up front suited us. David Raya was kicking long a lot. We know that Kai Havertz is strong in duels. It's something that he's been very good at since he's joined the club. I just think having a focal point in Havertz with quick players in Jesus and Sakiri, the side of him, could have been really effective. And I think this is a theme which is occurring now, that we're seeing the meritocracy prioritised. We saw it at Everton last week. Vieira sort of earned his start and then played in the match when really that wasn't a match which you'd consider Fabio Vieira particularly well suited to, even though it worked on the day. So yeah, just a theme for me that I don't want Arteta to sort of move away from selecting the team best suited to winning a football match just because certain players have been playing well lately. As for the good stuff, as you can probably tell in the tone of my voice, you know, I'm still a bit pissed off about the match. There wasn't much good stuff. I thought Gabriel played very well. You know, the Bukayo Saka goal and assist machine continues. And very importantly, we did not lose the match despite having a lot of injuries. At the end of the day, if you can't win, don't lose. And Arsenal didn't on the day in spite of some late scares. That's got to be my good stuff. That's about all, really. You know, the first half an hour was good, but even in the first half an hour, there were some stray passes. The attack just isn't functioning at the moment, and that's reflected in our 12th place position in the XG table at the moment when it comes to goals for. And yeah, that needs to change if we're gonna start challenging again towards the top of the table. And just on that, maybe it's time to start reevaluating our ambitions for the season just a little. Not saying that we can't win the title, that's ridiculous, but let's not compare ourselves to City every week, and let's see where we are perhaps in a few months. You know, let's keep close to them. If we're in it to win it at the end, great, but we don't have to be worrying about that every week. As for my explosive moment, it's the same as Alfie's. It's the Jorginho mistake. I was going to say it was Declan Rice substitution, but yeah, that mistake from Jorginho is just inexcusable. Whatever level, I did say on the Lost podcast that this isn't something that Jorginho hasn't done before. He's got a history of losing the ball in these situations. He'd done it for Chelsea. He was yet to do it for Arsenal. And happened at one of the worst possible times, and in these positions where we need composure, you'd expect someone as experienced as him to do better. That was the explosive moment of this football match. I'm sorry to everyone at home that we weren't able to produce a podcast which was as good as it usually is with all our interaction, but hopefully we're back later this week. And thank you for listening to this collection.
Hey y'all, I guess I'm fourth to this whole shindig, this party, this collection of independent voices. Different format, but you know, same analysis, I think. And as I am last, you're gonna get the usual post podcast spiel from me, but of course, echoing Danny and Rob's thoughts and sentiments, we are unbelievably sorry that we could not get this podcast out to you in its normal format. We did spend about 30, 45 minutes yesterday, and you know, that's a long time in our lives, trying to figure things out, recover audio, make sure that we could give you the product that we like to do, give you something that is up to the quality that you as listeners deserve. I'll be honest, it was a really good podcast, and I had a hell of a lot of fun recording it, even though it was depressing, as will have been alluded to a few times. I a little disappointed, but you know, best thing we can do is crack on and step back into this whole thing. So I think I may take a slightly different tack. I don't know the order that the other boys have assembled this in with their setups, because I have not yet started to edit this podcast, as is my job. But I'm going to start with my good stuff. Which is that, in my mind, there's still a lot of hope. Actually, I did lie to you a second ago. I have listened to Alfie's message because he sent it through WhatsApp. And I want to kind of start where he ended, in that, you know, I like Danny, I think when we were on the podcast, he talked a lot about injuries, and I'm sure that's his canon concern. And there's a lot that Rob had to say about kind of suitability and different game states and how Mikel manages to structure his squad to kind of balance out his own favoritism. And I think I want to respond to a lot of that by talking, you know, first about just the fact that we are still in a good position. We are still unbeaten. We are a point behind where we were this time last season, at a time when we were theoretically, you know, challenging for the title. But furthermore, we have a squad that, while injured, is still deep, is still of quality. We have a good manager. We have a good ethos behind the club. And, you know, I feel like there's been a lot of comparison to Ange, and, oh, has he short-tracked the system? No, he's, you know, he's been coaching Tottenham for 6 days. Sorry, 6 games. Feels like 6 days. But he's new. He's fresh. He's the new toy. He's the new kid on the block, and he's done amazing, no mistake. But to look where we are as a club, we are still young. We challenged for a title last year and have improved. I'm very much, you know, realistic about this whole thing. I find that if you look at Chelsea and United, the teams that are kind of scrapping for really low points, I find that there's this element of expectation that isn't being lived up to. And they're constantly looking for, you know, a solution, whether it's the Glazers out, or Chelsea replacing their manager every 5 seconds, or bringing in every young player under the sun, or, you know, at United, the way that Ten Hag is handling the squad is, in my mind at least, pretty clearly directed towards kind of being a disciplinarian and figuring shit out that way. And these are two clubs who look back at their prior successes and say, why can't we have that again? In my mind, without any kind of realism, I don't see in those two teams that there are steps towards progress, right? That there's kind of good backing and good management, and, you know, things are falling apart at the seams. And you'll hear pundits say, well, I don't know why things are wrong. And that, I think, is the best thing about where we are, is that against Tottenham, we had a lot of problems, injury being one of them, but personnel, some tactics, some ways that things went, right? There were issues, but we are in a place as a club where we can, and, you know, I keep saying we as if I have any role in this, I feel like I do. I mean, but just because I love them to pieces, it feels to me like we have direction. We have purpose. We know what we need to do in a lot of scenarios to get from the draw. We didn't even lose to Tottenham, by the way. The draw against Tottenham to, you know, a more successful formula, a more successful situation. Yes, that will involve having like our key players on the pitch. Of course it will. But also, we are not in a financial mess. We are not in a squad rebuild. And to a certain point, I don't think we necessarily have to be as concerned, having dropped more points than we wanted to, about expectations. I think, you know, if you listen to like Paul Merson's comments coming into the match, he was like, oh, I expect Arsenal to destroy Tottenham and there's only one winner here. And I hate that shit, because it's the type of expectation that's being placed on the squad by pundits, by fans, by everyone. And to an extent is almost a hangover effect from last season. I suppose I'm getting into, you know, more of my general takeaways right now, and I'm just going to do it. I find that it's after last season, we kind of went from this carefree, you know, flying by the seat of our pants runaway train of a team to, as the expectations continued to heap up and heap up and heap up, we started looking over our shoulders. We started playing every game within ourselves, every game with Manchester City in mind. And we've kind of started this season the same way, in that we went into the Tottenham game, in my mind at least, not thinking about Tottenham. And I think, and this has probably been commented on by the other boys, but we talked about it a lot on the podcast, that, you know, the podcast that never was, that we kind of believe that more space to city allows us more room to kind of play with our own identity, to fix the issues that we have encountered in thinking about somebody other than ourselves, other than what happens in those 90 minutes on the pitch. It was such a key element of last season's ethos that kind of declined as we got into the pressure of a title race, a true title race, like into the stretch at the end. And I think that just being able to rediscover the freedom and the joy and that underdog mentality, right? Because if you're going into a match like Paul Merson and saying, well, we have to expect to win, you have two options in that you either live up to expectations or you fail. And all that is a recipe for failure. Because if you are either adequate or below adequate, then there's no room for excellence, for improvement. There's no kind of inner fire. There's no motivation, right? There's no progress. And as Arteta has shown over the last, 3 years, this is a team very capable of progress, and we are continuing through our step-to-step plan. This is still not the season when we were meant to challenge for the league. That's next season, according to our 5-year plan. We were 2 years early last year. This is, our season building up to it, building up to that peak. That was the goal. And, we're not terrible. We're not flops. We're not, even particularly that bad. We have to get our goal scoring numbers up, our creative numbers up. We have to start threatening again. And I think a lot of that lack of complacency and that emotional fire, especially in such a young team, comes from external motivation that is not pass muster or fail. There has to be kind of some internal notion of success, some driving force forward. And I think that it's quite, I don't want to say easy, but it's reasonable to start instilling that within our squad again, because, maybe that we're, now that we're fifth, we can not necessarily have to play like we've been playing, play within ourselves, play without that fire. And we saw it in the Champions League, right? It's a new frontier. It's a new point of excitement. The players looked inspired. They looked, half a season younger, right? Our squad has looked tired, I think. And it's a lot of that has to do with the soft factors, with the expectations, with the emotional part of the game. And when we were allowed to play not only tactically freely, but joyfully against PSV, we saw what this team is really capable of. And we saw all of the sparks that we were missing after, since last season. So good stuff is that there is still hope. It's realistic, but there is still hope, and we are not lost as a club. I've been going for like 9 minutes so far, so I'm going to keep the rest of this brief because that's a really long time. My canon concern is Oleksandr Zinchenko. I really didn't love his presence in the match, and I think, we talk about young squads and impressionable players, and yeah, Zinchenko's certainly an emotional player, but like, to be in the position where he is, to be, especially after the loss of Rice, our best creative midfielder, he didn't contribute much. He was, not fierce. He was not competitive. He cycled the ball well, sure, but he kind of looked off the boil. And for a player like Zinchenko, who is an international captain, who is widely regarded in football circles as a bit of a warrior, as a scrapper, he's got a lot of fight in him. I really didn't love watching him kind of sit down and roll over against Tottenham. And we know what we get with Zinchenko, right? We get the added bonus of midfield control and chance creation and incisiveness and all of these amazing aspects that he brings. And we know the downfalls of Zinchenko, and that he's not always the greatest defender. He can get caught out of position too high up the pitch. And usually it's okay to have that drawback, to play a player like Zinchenko, knowing what he brings to the team despite his deficiencies, because at top form, a team can cover for that. And we do tend to cover for that pretty adequately. But then, Dejan Kulusevski was their outlet ball over and over and over again. And for Zinchenko not to provide what he needs to in the attacking sense and in ball control and in retention and in, trying to help us suffocate Tottenham in the way that we were very much able to, as Alfie mentioned, I think, in the first 35 minutes, but also to not contribute defensively, to allow Kulusevski to have pretty free roam of that right flank, to allow Tottenham a foothold in a game where we did not impress. I will say it was our worst performance of this season, very much our worst performance I've seen probably since the start of last season, and there's reasons for that I have, but you know, I think that he was kind of pivotal to that. And I would have loved to see Tomiyasu, frankly, especially against a left footer like Kulusevski, who doesn't necessarily have the top end speed of, I don't know, a Doku or a Musa Diaby or one of the really fast wingers that he's typically bad at dealing with, Tomiyasu. But yeah, I think Zinchenko is really disappointing to me on the day, because he's one of those players who I almost expect to step up in a situation like we found ourselves in against Tottenham, and he didn't. And in fact, he got worse, and that was difficult to watch. Yeah, I think that's what I've got. My last thing, my explosive moment, as I'm sure, you know, the common consensus on the podcast was that it was the Jorginho slip, and I agree. I'm just going to throw in my own little canon concern, which, other than the expectations thing that I've already talked about, sorry, not canon concern, explosive moment. I'm on the wrong thing, really. That was a canon concern. As for my moment, I wanted to pick out the Jesus miss, you know, because we're 1-0 up at that point. And for me, just in my opinion, I find that him not putting the game to bed and Spurs, you know, equalizing pretty soon after, like, we with a 2-0 lead have the option to maintain our stranglehold, to keep them under pressure, to keep them running scared. I mean, we had a lot of players, you know, really not up to their best. Basuma had a pretty terrible game when we were putting him under pressure. Of course, Jesus picks the pocket of Madison, who in my mind was honestly Spurs' best player on the day. He was fantastic. And, you know, I mean, the turn to Spinsaka for the goal, it's great. It's a great finish by Son, yada, yada. And, you know, of course, he has the turnover with Jorginho as well. Frankly, we just gave them too much space and time and what have you. But in a game filled with accidental goals, you know, filled with a shitty error by Jorginho and an own goal by Romero and a stupid handball by Romero and a weird action by David Raya, the one kind of intentional moment where Arsenal really could have taken the step up that they needed is with the Jesus miss. And, you know, some of you out there might be saying, oh, but David Raya had this worldy of a save. Yeah, of course he did. It's one of the best saves I've ever seen on Brennan Johnson. But make no mistake that when we missed that, our heads went down. And Tottenham had their two best chances of the match, bar the Jorginho mistake in the goal that they scored with Son in the first half and the Johnson chance, directly after, you know, Jesus' miss, and kind of after the emotional response to that. And so, I don't know. I find that that was a pivotal moment, but I think Jorginho's slip is what really lost us the match, because we just had no control and no presence after Tottenham equalized the second time. That's it for my segment. We decided on the podcast that our song would be The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, because it's the song people play when they're sad, and we're all sad and depressed because we tied Tottenham in a match that we probably should have won. Not that really either team deserved to, but, you know, whatever. This is me signing off, not spotlight, marketing opportunity of a lifetime for everyone. Hey, go listen to this podcast and all our other podcasts, and check out Harvey's and Daniel's most recent pieces on weloveyourarsenal.co.uk, all of the pieces on weloveyourarsenal.co.uk, our wonderful blog. Thank you all for tuning in. And on behalf of myself and the three other gentlemen that helped me host this podcast, goodbye.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone. Streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light, split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. shared. No one did disturb the sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell. The people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, the tenement halls, whispering. Silence.